This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Don't think I'm coming in tomorrow, unless there is a problem. But everything's been going real well. Oh, rats. Did I not bring my coffee cup? Okay. Hold up one moment. Okay, I'm back. I have my coffee cup. Life is good. Time to go home. I was talking to some of the other programmers as I was walking out, and I didn't pick up my coffee cup, and it's special. It's one of those Contigo cups with the sealed lids, and it's 20 ounces, so I can make my half liter of water with my coffee and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so I've got it. Now it's time to go home. Anyways, been a good week at work. I think I said this is episode 369. Gonna be 370 next week. Whoop, whoop. On my way to 400. So, I had a good week this week. Everything's been puttering along. We've got a lot of projects that are finally getting organized and coming to fruition. So, we have a financial reporting site that we're going to go to full beta in just days now, and we have a children information survey site that's going to be going to full beta probably within a week, two weeks. So that's good. And we're getting closer on making our decision on the business process management software. You know, just starting to weed down what we have. We actually had a talk with one of the vendors today, and they didn't necessarily say that they weren't the right solution for us, but he did say, you know, one thing about us, he said, if we look at your stuff, say, and we don't think we're the right thing, we're going to tell you we don't think we're the right thing. So, and to get done some of what we need to get done, we're having to jump through some hoops. So, anyway, so that all seems to be going along fine. On the writing, last week, I think I had mentioned that I was stuck on a little spot, didn't quite have it. And so I was going to back up and try it again, and I had mentioned, you know, it's going to be fine. I think I mentioned that last week. I was going to go back and review what I said last week just to make sure I'm just not lying when I say that, but I think that's what I said last week. Well, it's interesting. It's just always so interesting how these things work out. I had already kind of decided. We had some friends who their father died, and their mother had died several months ago, and we had gone to the visitation. And so these friends, their father had died, and my wife had said, you know, so-and-so, their father has died, and I went, yup, and she said, you know, we should probably go to the visitation, and I kind of looked at her, and I said, well, yeah. Because that particular week, last week, I had lost Sunday night to running sound at church, which was unexpected. I had lost, for some reason, I had lost Tuesday night to something. I don't know. And I'd lost Wednesday night to running sound at church. And then, no, I didn't lose Tuesday night. I lost Wednesday night running sound at church. That was going to be Thursday night. I was going to lose Friday night because we were going to go down, spend some time. And so it's like, you know, oof, dying out here, not getting enough time writing. And she said, well, I'll just go. My wife said, I'll just go. Okay. So, but I wasn't altogether happy with that. But, you know, So I got home and I called my wife and I said, getting a better idea of where is this and what, and I think I looked it up. Maybe I looked it up, and it was like 5 o'clock. It was from 5 to 8. And I thought, oh, Phil, you should have checked this first. Because you could have just kind of made a short jog, get out there, come back. But I was home and I thought, oh no, it's like 20 minutes out, it's 10 minutes there, it's 20 minutes back, you know, 45 minutes or so, I'm home and they're friends of the family. So I decided, okay, that's it. So I'm thinking about what I'm trying to do with this start of this chapter. Going out, all the way out. I'm thinking. I don't have it. I don't have it. And get all the way out there, say hello to everybody, do the thing, you know, come get back in my car. And it's really interesting. I get back in my car and I think, yeah, I'm going to turn on the radio. So I turned on the radio and it's NPR. And they happen to be talking about someone's translation, I think it was of the Iliad or something. And it was beautifully done. It was some writer who had worked on this in his spare time for who knows how long. And I mean, it was really beautifully voiced. Lovely, interesting words. And I'm listening to that, I'm like, yeah, nice job, buddy. Good job. And they were talking about this interesting verb, snuffled. I don't know. Anyways, about the three heads eating this, and there's something like sluffling, or I'd never even heard the word. I'm like, yeah, cool word. And my mind suddenly flashed over to the beginning of the chapter, and this verb popped into my head. And the verb was hockey pucked, which I don't think is really a verb. It's not a verb. Hockey pucked. Like hockey puck, except with an ED on the end. Hockey pucked. And all of a sudden I realize, wait a minute. And just from that verb, it's like everything opened up in that scene. And I decided, yeah, this machine, in fact, would do one thing, and then it would snap upright and hockey puck this other thing across the room. Well, this machine is ejecting like a robot. It's called a mech in the, you know, it's half human, half robot. Injecting it onto the floor. And as it's floundering around trying to figure out what is just happening to it, because it's just waking up, the machine snaps upright and hockey pucks it across the floor. Okay, it makes me laugh. I'm sorry. Made me laugh. And I thought, oh, right. I need to write a birth scene for mechs. That's what I need to do. And I mean, I got home and it just started going, you know, just started growing, going. So, I mean, it's very interesting that I struggle for like 2 days on this. And then I do the thing that I know probably is the right thing to do. But, you know, I don't want to take the time to do it. But then I decide to take the time to do it. And then I get back in the car and I'm listening to NPR for a moment. And they're talking about this beautiful language that this guy wrote in his translation. I think it was the Iliad. And then suddenly this word pops into my mind. I'm thinking about that chapter again. And I'm thinking, and, you know, I think maybe even I had the image of this machine snapping upright and knocking this poor bewildered mech across the room. And then, you know, as soon as that verb showed up, hockey pucked it across the room. It's like, okay, there it is. It's so interesting. This adventure is so interesting. Because there's such fog sometimes. And then all of a sudden, you know, the fog parts and the choirs sing, woo! You know, and all, it's like, hey, there it is. There it is. So I'm actually kind of in a little bit of a fog right now because I just finished chapter 4,
heading into chapter 5.
But I'm not really happy with the end of chapter 4. but I feel like it's done for now. It's not necessarily done, but it's done for now. And usually when that happens, if I just walk away from it, you know, come back to it later, because a lot of times I won't have all the pieces I need to make that chapter happen. And so I have to write out the rest of the book, and then I realize, oh, right, that can't be there, that has to be there, and this other piece needs to be brought back over there, and then I can sync it together, you know, I can really cinch it down. So I'm ready to leave the end of chapter 4 behind. I will probably read through it tonight before I start in. And I'm started on chapter 5. Excuse me. So I don't really expect much of an edit on chapter 4, the end of chapter 4. But I feel like I'm still coming back to it. There's more there that I'm not exploring yet. But that's okay. Sometimes it's okay to leave some fog behind. I know. Not talking about leaving fog out of your behind. I'm talking about leaving fog behind. Sometimes it's okay to leave the fog behind and come back and go after it later. So I'm ready to just kind of move on. Because there's more stuff to discover in the book, and I've got to go get those discoveries made before I'm really ready to finish up chapter 4 for good. So I'm just pushing forward. I have lots of decisions to make in these first 6 or 7 chapters. But, you know, I'm just going to keep plowing, and it always surprises me how it all just kind of works out, gets together. So there's little pieces of ideas, and it's just a matter of putting the fingers in motion and just keeping them going. So it's fun. One of these days, I'm supposedly going to listen to The Cathedral, and I'm going to, you know, talk about that, because that is a really interesting game, and it's a really interesting thing to have been featured on national programs that aren't necessarily religious. So, you know, I'm interested in talking about it, but I have to listen to the whole thing again and then make some notes and et cetera, et cetera. And I had come across an article of the type and genre of article that I am always fascinated in. And that is in other individuals discussing their model of what's going on in life with respect to the flesh and the spirit. I'm always fascinated to hear people talk about the flesh and the spirit and how they explain or attempt to explain away the various dynamics that are going on. And as part of that, I find really fascinating when people acknowledge that their intuition, that their senses, that their feelings are telling them one thing, but they feel compelled because of their religious beliefs or lack thereof to ignore all of that and to embrace something else. So, the name of this article was The Monkey and the Mind. If you look it up, you'll be able to find it. It's part of a whole other series of articles that well, the topic is very earthy. I think of all of the articles is very earthy and very timely, and I think the woman in her articles has a really good viewpoint, and I think she has some good things, interesting things to say, and I'm always interested in reading about life, especially when it comes from a feminine perspective. So, If you happen to look up this article and then start browsing some of the other articles, you might think, what in the world is Phil doing on this site? But I find the feminine perspective fascinating. And there's just so many things that I would not have guessed were a certain way, that now as I'm learning more that they are that way, it truly is a fascinating thing to me. And we may talk about some of those things on future podcasts, but they're very earthy things. This one is not. This one is simply the article's author, Emily Nagoski, I think is her name. It's her attempt to, in a very cursory and brief way, define flesh and spirit in her own way and then make her own recommendations for what to do about this dichotomy within us. So the article is called The Monkey and the Mind, which I use the term monkey all the time. So that caught my eye. And so then I started reading through this article, and she says, I'm sure you've all heard of the mind-body connection, and you may have even heard me argue against it. Quote, there is no such thing as a mind-body connection, I say over and over again. Quote, that implies there are three things, a mind, a body, and a connection between the two, when in reality there is only one thing, colon, there is only the embodied mind. And she said, which is true. She says, as a logical argument, it's unassailable. Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but that's okay. And as a piece of motivational speaking, it usually goes over pretty well in the moment. She said, but then a person who heard me talk about it goes and lives in a world and can't shake the intractable illusion that there is a mind and there is a body. And they may affect each other, but they sure do feel like separate things. She said, and indeed, often I can't but help talk about it as though they were separate. Quote, it comes down to you versus your body. Oh, if it comes down to you versus your body wins every time, I tell students. Which is unfortunate, because it doesn't have to win every time. She said, I talk about the monkey, the animal earthbound organism that so many of the highly intelligent, high-functioning students that I work with would willingly trade for a robot's casting so they didn't have to sleep, didn't have to exercise, didn't feel stressed, didn't have to make decisions about food, etc. Quote, if you had a pet monkey, I asked, would you feed it crap food and never let it exercise or play and tell it how stupid and ugly it was? No, you'd love your pet monkey, so love your monkey. Okay, now there's a principle that's a pretty good principle there. I was talking to a friend today at breakfast, and talking to another buddy later in the day, kind of about this, because this kind of thought had come to me several days ago as well. And I hadn't necessarily put it in these terms before. The terms that I had used before is when I get to be 20 years down the road or 10 years down the road, I would really like to look back and say that I have made good decisions. The way I started thinking about it a couple of days ago was, why would I ever want to sabotage my future selves? Why wouldn't I want to be helpful to my future selves? Why wouldn't I want to eat well so that my future selves, the self that is a month ahead of me, the self that is a year ahead of me, the self that is 10 years and 20 years, those future selves, why would I not want them to prosper? Because I kind of looked around and I saw some people that were just sabotaging their future selves, and I thought, why would you do that? Why? But people do that all the time. So when I read this article, I was like, yeah, that's a good question, you know. You'd love your pet monkey. Okay, so that's fine. So she goes, and notice again how she characterized this, that, you know, it's the logic is unassailable, that there's only one thing, but it's really difficult for her to get away from talking about two things. One moment. Getting my mail. Just a second. Good. Okay. Let me just check down below here. Yeah. Okay, we're good. She says, when she says stuff like that, why don't you just love your pet monkey? She said that inherently plays on the perceived division of mind and body, monkey. It's a problem and indeed a hypocrisy. And at the same time, I can't abandon the utility of the monkey metaphor. And when I talk to people about flesh and spirit, I usually preface it with, okay, I don't know if this is actually the way it is, but this sure is useful. All right, so the fact is, she says, our redonkulous brains capable of generating all but impenetrable illusion of inorganic spirit slash mind are housed in a sticky, needy, reactive mess that is an animal's body. It requires air, water, food in that order. It breathes, sweats, pees, and poops. It notices threats in the environment and responds with adrenaline. It creates Velcro between your chair 10 minutes before you go to the gym. It tells you, meh, you don't really need to work out. Conserve your energy when you really need it, like when you go, you or your loved ones are being chased by a lion, or meh, you don't need sex. Sex is for people who are worried about their, aren't worried about their survival. You've got stress, baby, and you got to deal with the potential lions that are hunting you down before you can think about sex. Okay. So, you know, I hear those statements, and I map that pretty easily and quickly onto flesh, but she does not. Nonetheless, she acknowledges that it feels like that's coming from the monkey, which is interesting. She says, and you're never aware, or almost never aware, which, see, this is where I think you can be aware, of why you really decided not to go to the gym, when the truth is your monkey has hijacked your reasoning self and persuaded it that you don't have the energy to spare. Says the monkey, the body, has multiple holograms of itself contained within your brain. This was interesting, and I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. The somatosensory homunculus, the motor homunculus, that's what it is, etc. And the world itself has multiple holograms in your brains. The various functions of the visual cortex, the various functions of the auditory cortex, the different streams of tactile perception, smell, and taste. This thing we call mind is really just an illusion that emerges when all of those different streams of information come together, or rather the mind, the stuff that you consciously are aware of, is like a precis, an abstract of all that information. Okay, well, okay, so that's her theory that, you know, the mind is just an emergent property, which, okay, that's fine. That's fine. There are some interesting things. And I really got to do some more research and talk about this, because there's some interesting things that seem to contradict the idea that the mind is an emergent quality from just plain flesh and blood. That if it was just an emergent quality, that there shouldn't be certain indicators. I'll have to do some research and bring that up. Anyway, so she talks about that. She says at the end of it, she said, I'll write another post sometime soon about what the monkey needs, care and feeding of your monkey, if you will, you know, blah, blah, to maximize sexual satisfaction, which is what her whole thing is. Never mind. For now, as is seasonally appropriate, I'm giving thanks for my monkey, my physical body that engages sensually with the world, notices potential threat and responds appropriately, notices beauty and responds appropriately. The mind is all well and good. I make my living with my mind, but without the monkey, there would be no mind at all. See, that's fine if she wants both. So this year, I give thanks to the monkey. Okay. So what's interesting about all of this to me is she talks about it being an intractable illusion that we're just, you know, but she needs to fight against it because she is a materialist. And she does not accept that there is anything beyond the material realm. Therefore, this thing that she feels, that she senses, that she cannot get away from expressing in her language, that deep down she is convinced of, because she falls back onto languages and metaphors that reinforce it. That thing she cannot acknowledge, and in that there is a fundamental dissonance. And that fundamental dissonance then takes away some of her ability to deal with the flesh, because I personally think there's like, I don't know exactly where the flesh comes and exactly where the spirit comes, but it feels like to me that we've got the flesh and the spirit warring internally, but the flesh is more than just the monkey, because it has planning. It knows you're 10 minutes away from going to the gym, and so it's going to start throwing up everything it can to keep you from going to the gym, because it does hate your future self. It hates your future selves. And if it can keep you tied up in the moment and not looking forward as to what would be the best embrace of your future selves, it knows it can wreak destruction on the you that is 1 month from now, the you that is a year and 2 years and 5 years and 10 years from now. Because that's what it's trying to do. It's trying to slow you down and destroy you. But see, if it's hard for the materialist to even explain how there can be a mind, they're certainly not wanting, will not want to go on and acknowledge that there is not only a mind, but there is flesh and spirit, in essence, two minds within us that are at war. And the sad part of that is that if you can't acknowledge that, you really do make a tougher time for yourself in life. Because you, what this analogy has done for me, understanding that the flesh is my enemy and that it's trying to destroy me from within, what that has done for me is that when I feel sluggish in embracing a task, I can objectify that and shove that away from me and say, you're just trying to bring destruction on my future selves, and I'm not going to allow that. I'm going to keep pushing through. That's valuable. That distancing of yourself from the flesh is valuable. So there may be something completely else going on internally. And maybe at the end of the day, when it's all said and over, maybe it is all just materialism, but it doesn't matter, because there is such benefit in treating it as if it isn't materialism, as if there is a flesh, a bad dog and a good dog within us. There's such benefit to that in living life and making a path of success for our future selves that to me it's worth it. So people, well, what if there is no? I don't care. I don't care. Because the life that this provides for me, the life of openness and mercy and grace and gentleness and kindness, that life is worth it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.